Thank you for being a valued supporter of the 10X Podcast Group. Your dedication means the world to us. Today, we bring you a gripping tale titled Echoes of the Past. Your continued support and subscription fuel our passion for storytelling, and we deeply appreciate every moment you spend with us. So, without further ado, let's dive into today's compelling narrative. Chapter 1: The Tape. The morning air was cold and crisp, carrying the faint scent of decaying leaves as Detective Malcolm Grayson sat on his porch nursing a cup of black coffee. Retirement hadn't been the sanctuary he imagined. His mind was a restless battlefield, haunted by the ghosts of unsolved cases and the guilt of unanswered questions. One case in particular clawed at the edges of his thoughts: the murder of Emily Cartwright. 30 years had passed, but time hadn't dulled the memory of her lifeless body, pale and bruised, beneath the willow trees in Denton Park. A knock at the door interrupted his thoughts. He frowned, setting his coffee down. Visitors were rare these days. As he opened the door, he found no one, only a small brown package on the doormat. No return address, no markings, just his name scrawled in shaky black ink. He brought it inside and placed it on the kitchen table, eyeing it with suspicion. Years of dealing with the unpredictable left him wary of surprises. He reached for a knife and carefully slit the tape, peeling back the cardboard flaps. Inside was a dusty cassette tape, the kind that had gone out of fashion decades ago. Written across its label in faded red ink were two words, "Play me." Grayson felt a chill creep up his spine. He hadn't owned a cassette player in years, but his curiosity outweighed his hesitation. He rummaged through his attic, eventually unearthing an old tape recorder coated in dust. After some fiddling, the recorder whirred to life. He slid the tape in, pressed play, and leaned in as the crackle of static filled the room. Then the sound emerged. A woman's voice, faint and trembling, whispered, "Please, please don't. No, stop." Her words were punctuated by muffled cries and the sound of a struggle, shuffling feet, a heavy thud, and finally silence. Grayson's heart raced. The voice was distorted, distant, but unmistakably human. He leaned closer, trying to discern more, when a second voice, cold and menacing, murmured something indecipherable. The recording ended abruptly, leaving only the hum of the tape spinning. He sat in stunned silence, the weight of the recording pressing down on him. The voice, was it Emily's? It couldn't be. Her case had been closed years ago. Daniel Kerr, her high school boyfriend, had been convicted of her murder and was still serving time. But if this tape was real, it suggested otherwise. Grayson rewound the tape, playing it again and again, searching for clues. He jotted down the sounds he could identify: a scuffle, a faint whistle in the background, and the jingle of what could be keys. Every sound felt like a puzzle piece waiting to fit into the larger picture. The next morning, Grayson carried the tape to his small study, where he kept the files from his most haunting cases. Pulling out the worn folder marked Emily Cartwright, he spread its contents across the desk. Photos, witness statements, and autopsy reports stared back at him. The details of Emily's life and tragic death were etched into every page, but nothing explained the sudden appearance of the tape. He examined the evidence again with fresh eyes. Emily had been found under a willow tree in Denton Park, her skull fractured. A rock nearby had been deemed the murder weapon. Daniel Kerr had no alibi and had been seen arguing with her the night she died. The jury convicted him based on circumstantial evidence, and the town had moved on. But Grayson hadn't. Something about the case had always felt off, and now this tape reignited his doubts. Who had sent it to him? And why now, after all these years? Determined to find answers, Grayson drove to Denton Park, the site of Emily's death. The willow trees had grown thicker, their long branches casting eerie shadows over the ground. He stood beneath the tree where her body had been found, staring at the spot as if it might offer him some insight. His thoughts were interrupted by the distant sound of children laughing. A young boy on a bicycle rode past, glancing curiously at the older man standing alone under the tree. Grayson shook off the distraction and turned his attention back to the tape. If the sounds were recorded here, perhaps something had been overlooked all those years ago. Later that evening, he called his former colleague, Lila Mendoza, a forensic audio specialist who had retired 2 years after him. "I need your help," he said, explaining the situation. She agreed to meet the next day and analyze the tape. Grayson sat back in his chair, a mix of anticipation and unease swirling in his chest. The tape was a thread, and he was ready to pull it, even if it unraveled everything he thought he knew about Emily Cartwright's murder. As he prepared for bed, his phone buzzed. An anonymous text message lit up the screen. "The truth is louder than you think." Grayson stared at the words, his pulse quickening. Someone was watching, someone who wanted him to dig deeper. The question wasn't just who, but why. The answers, he knew, would be buried in the echoes of the past. Chapter 2. The Voices in the Dark. The next morning, Grayson met Lila Mendoza at her modest home just outside of town. Her expertise in forensic audio analysis had once been instrumental in solving some of the toughest cases in the state. Though she had aged since their last collaboration, her sharp eyes and no-nonsense demeanor remained unchanged. "What's this about, Malcolm?" Lila asked, gesturing for him to sit at her cluttered workbench. Old recorders, microphones, and computer equipment surrounded them like relics from another time. He handed her the cassette tape. "I got this yesterday. No return address, no explanation. Just the tape. I think it's connected to Emily Cartwright's case." Lila raised an eyebrow, her interest piqued. "The Cartwright case? That's decades old. Didn't they convict her boyfriend?" "They did," Grayson said grimly. "But this tape, it doesn't sit right. I need to know what's on it. Can you clean it up? Extract anything useful?" Lila nodded, already inserting the tape into her advanced audio player. "Let's see what we're dealing with." The room filled with the same crackling static Grayson had heard before. Lila listened intently, her brow furrowing as the faint voices played. "This isn't just a regular recording," she murmured. "There's more here." She adjusted the audio levels, isolating frequencies, amplifying certain ranges, and filtering out the static. Slowly, the sounds became clearer. The woman's voice, pleading, was unmistakable. "Please, please don't. No, stop." Lila paused the recording, her fingers hovering over the keyboard. "It's definitely a woman. But the voice isn't as young as I expected. If this is Emily, she sounds older than 17. Grayson leaned forward, his heart sinking. "What does that mean? Could it be someone else?" "Possibly. Let me keep going." She continued to isolate the second voice, a low, chilling tone that spoke over the woman's cries. It was garbled, almost guttural, but certain words began to emerge. "You shouldn't have, you know what happens, quiet." Grayson scribbled the phrases in his notebook, each word sending a shiver down his spine. The voice wasn't one he recognized, and it didn't match Daniel Kerr's soft-spoken demeanor from the trial. Lila's hands moved deftly over her controls, adjusting further. Then she froze. "There's something else," she said, her voice tight with concentration. She rewound the tape, enhancing a faint background noise. A metallic jingle keys, and then a distinctive whistle, low and repetitive. Grayson sat up straight. "A whistle? That's not random." "It's deliberate," Lila confirmed. "It could have been made by someone nearby, possibly the person recording. It sounds too intentional to be environmental noise." Grayson's mind raced. None of the original witness statements had mentioned a whistle. The groundskeeper, a man named Leonard Brooks, had been at the park that day, but his role had been deemed irrelevant to the investigation. Could the whistle belong to him? Lila pressed pause and turned to him. "There's more here, Malcolm. These voices, the way the woman speaks, her tone, it sounds like she knows the person hurting her. There's fear, but also familiarity." The statement sent a chill through him. He thought back to the original investigation, remembering how Emily's friends and family had described her as kind and trusting. Could someone close to her have been involved? That afternoon, Grayson drove to the county archives to retrieve additional case records. His access as a former detective still granted him entry to files most people couldn't touch. He combed through the reports, focusing on witness statements. One in particular caught his eye. A park visitor, an elderly woman named Doris Miller, had reported hearing a whistle near the willow trees on the day Emily's body was discovered. The detail had been dismissed as unrelated at the time. Grayson's jaw tightened. How had they missed this? He needed to find Doris, if she was still alive. Before he left, he copied another file that had always troubled him, the groundskeeper's employee record. Leonard Brooks had abruptly quit his job just days after Emily's murder. The original investigators had questioned him briefly, but without solid evidence, they'd let him go. Now, paired with the tape sounds, his sudden disappearance seemed far more suspicious. The next day, Grayson tracked down Doris Miller at a retirement home. She was frail, but sharp, her piercing blue eyes scrutinizing him as he introduced himself. "You worked on that poor girl's case, didn't you?" she asked. "Emily. Such a tragedy." "Yes, ma'am," Grayson replied. "I need your help. Do you remember anything about the day she was found?" She pursed her lips, thinking. "It was a long time ago, but I do remember something odd. I was walking my dog in the park that morning. Around the willow trees, I heard someone whistling. A strange little tune, low, repetitive, almost like a signal. My dog started barking, and I thought about going over, but then I saw a man walking away. He looked angry, almost panicked. Can you describe him?" Grayson asked, his heart pounding. Her eyes narrowed. "I remember he wore a cap, a dark jacket. Average build. He didn't look at me, just kept his head down and walked fast." Grayson's mind jumped to Leonard Brooks. The description fit, but it wasn't conclusive. He thanked Doris and left, determined to find Leonard and confront him. That evening, back at his home, Grayson's phone buzzed again. Another anonymous message appeared. "The whistle knows the truth." Grayson stared at the screen, his pulse quickening. Someone knew he was digging into the case, and they were trying to steer him towards something, or warn him to back off. As the chapter closed, Grayson stood at the crossroads of doubt and determination. The tape was yielding clues, but it was also unraveling a web far more complex than he had anticipated. A whistle, a jingle of keys, a voice full of malice. And the haunting question, who had kept these secrets buried for so long, and why had they chosen now to let them surface? The answers lay in the voices in the dark. Chapter 3. Beneath the Surface. The next morning, Grayson sat in his car outside a small, dilapidated house on the outskirts of town. The name Leonard Brooks had been easy enough to find in old records, but tracking him down was another matter. Decades had passed, and most of the former groundskeeper's information was outdated. It was only after hours of calls and favors that Grayson had found someone who claimed Leonard still lived in the area, in this rundown shack surrounded by overgrown weeds and rusting cars. Grayson knocked on the door. No response. He knocked again, harder this time, and heard shuffling from inside. The door creaked open, revealing a gaunt man with hollow cheeks and a cigarette dangling from his lips. His eyes, bloodshot and wary, locked onto Grayson's. "Who the hell are you?" Leonard rasped. "Malcolm Grayson, retired detective. I need to ask you some questions about Emily Cartwright." Leonard's face twitched, his hand tightening on the doorframe. "That was 30 years ago. I got nothing to say." Grayson wedged his foot in the door before Leonard could slam it shut. "I think you do. And I think you've been carrying something you shouldn't for all these years." Leonard hesitated, his eyes darting nervously. After a moment, he stepped back and gestured for Grayson to enter. The interior of the house was as bleak as the outside, peeling wallpaper, the faint stench of mildew, and piles of junk stacked in every corner. Leonard sat on a sagging couch and lit another cigarette, his hands trembling slightly. "I don't know what you think you're going to find," he muttered. "I told the cops everything back then." "You told them nothing," Grayson countered, pulling out the tape recorder. He pressed play, letting the chilling sounds of the tape fill the room. Leonard froze. His cigarette dangled from his lips before falling onto the stained carpet. "Where'd you get that?" "It was sent to me," Grayson said, watching Leonard closely. "Recognize it?" Leonard swallowed hard, his hands gripping the couch. I don't know. Maybe. Look, I was just the groundskeeper. I didn't kill that girl." "But you were there," Grayson pressed. "You heard the whistle, didn't you? The one on the tape. And you saw something. Something you were too scared to tell the police." Leonard's breathing quickened. He looked like a man teetering on the edge of collapse. Finally, he buried his face in his hands. "I didn't want no trouble," he mumbled. "I didn't want to end up like her." Grayson's heart pounded. "What did you see, Leonard?" The old man looked up, his eyes glistening with tears. "I was in the park that night, doing my rounds. I heard voices near the willow trees, angry voices. A man and a woman. I didn't see their faces, but I recognized the whistle. It was the sheriff's son. He used to come to the park late at night, acting like he owned the place." Grayson felt a jolt of shock. The sheriff's son, Bradley Harper, had never been mentioned in the original investigation. He'd been a local golden boy, the kind of person no one would dare accuse of wrongdoing. If he was involved, it would explain why Leonard had kept quiet. "Why didn't you come forward?" Grayson asked. Leonard shook his head, his voice cracking. "You don't understand. The sheriff was powerful. He could ruin anyone. I saw Bradley leave that night, and I found the girl, lying there. I panicked. I thought if I said anything, they'd blame me. Did you record the tape?" "No." Leonard's voice rose in panic. "I swear I didn't. I never told anyone what I saw. But someone knew. Someone's been watching me ever since." Grayson's mind raced. If Leonard was telling the truth, Bradley Harper might have been the real killer, or at the very least, involved. But who had sent the tape? And why now? Determined to dig deeper, Grayson returned to his study and began researching Bradley Harper. The son of a now-deceased sheriff, Bradley had moved out of town shortly after Emily's murder. Public records showed he was now a successful businessman, living two states away. His sudden departure back then raised red flags. Had his father orchestrated a cover-up to protect him? Grayson also revisited the list of witnesses from the original case, focusing on those who had interacted with Bradley. One name stood out: Megan Taylor, Emily's best friend. She had been questioned briefly, but had provided no substantial leads. If anyone knew about Emily's relationships or conflicts, it would be her. Grayson met Megan at a quiet cafe in town. Now in her late 40s, she carried an air of melancholy, her eyes reflecting the weight of years of loss. "I never thought I'd hear Emily's name again," she said softly as they sat down. "I'm reopening the case unofficially," Grayson explained. "New evidence has come to light, and I need to ask you about her relationship with Bradley Harper." Megan's face darkened. "Bradley? Why are you asking about him?" "I have reason to believe he was in the park the night Emily died," Grayson said carefully. "Did she know him well?" Megan hesitated, then leaned in, her voice dropping to a whisper. "Emily didn't like Bradley. He made her uncomfortable. He'd show up at the diner where we worked, flirting with her, trying to impress her. She told me once that he wouldn't take no for an answer." Grayson's stomach churned. "Did she ever tell you he threatened her?" Megan's eyes filled with tears. "She said he followed her to the park one night, a few weeks before she died. She didn't tell me much, just that he scared her." Grayson nodded, his suspicions hardening into certainty. "Megan, I need to know, did Emily keep a diary or anything where she might have written about this?" Megan's lips trembled. "She had a notebook. I don't know what happened to it after she died." That night, Grayson sat in his study, piecing together the threads of the case. The tape, Leonard's account, and Megan's testimony all pointed to Bradley Harper. But without hard evidence, reopening the case officially would be impossible. His thoughts were interrupted by the buzz of his phone. Another anonymous message appeared. "The diary holds the key." Grayson stared at the words, his pulse quickening. The sender knew too much to be a random observer. Whoever they were pulling the strings. But to what end? As the chapter closed, Grayson realized he wasn't just uncovering a murder. He was unraveling a conspiracy that had been buried for decades. And someone out there was watching his every move. Chapter 4: Shattered Truth. The next morning, Grayson woke to the sound of rain tapping against his window. His thoughts were heavy, tangled in the web of secrets surrounding Emily Cartwright's death. The anonymous messages, the tape, Leonard's confession, and Megan's testimony all pointed toward a cover-up that had protected someone powerful. But without tangible evidence, it was just a fragile theory. Grayson's mind kept circling back to the diary. If Emily had written down her fears or any encounters with Bradley Harper, it could be the missing piece of the puzzle. But where was it? Megan hadn't known what happened to it, and the police report from the original case made no mention of a diary being collected as evidence. Grayson decided to revisit the Cartwright family. It had been years since he'd last spoken to them, but if anyone had kept Emily's belongings, it would be her parents. The thought filled him with unease. Losing a child left scars that never truly healed, and stirring up old wounds wasn't something he took lightly. The Cartwrights lived in the same modest house they had 30 years ago. The lawn was well kept, but the house itself looked tired, its paint peeling and windows slightly clouded. Grayson knocked on the door, and after a few moments, Emily's mother, Linda, appeared. Her face was worn, her eyes guarded, but she recognized him instantly. "Detective Grayson," she said, her voice laced with both surprise and apprehension. It's been a long time. I know this is unexpected, but I need to ask you some questions about Emily's case, he said, trying to sound as gentle as possible. I believe there's more to what happened that night. Linda's expression hardened, her grip tightening on the door. We were told it was over. That the man responsible was behind bars. I'm starting to think Daniel Kerr wasn't guilty, Grayson said. But I need your help to prove it. Linda's lips trembled, and for a moment, Grayson thought she might close the door on him. Instead, she stepped aside and motioned for him to enter. The house smelled faintly of lavender and old wood, and photos of Emily lined the walls, her bright smile frozen in time. Frank, Linda called, her voice trembling. It's Detective Grayson. He's reopening the case. Emily's father, Frank, shuffled into the room, his shoulders hunched with age and grief. He shook Grayson's hand but said nothing, his eyes scanning the detective with a mix of hope and suspicion. Grayson took a deep breath. I'm looking for something Emily might have left behind, a diary or a journal. Something where she may have written about her life, her fears, or anyone who might have threatened her. Frank exchanged a look with Linda before nodding slowly. She had a notebook, he said. She wrote in it all the time. After she died, we couldn't bear to look at it. It's in a box in the attic, with some of her other things. Can I see it? Grayson asked. Frank hesitated, but Linda touched his arm. If it helps find the truth, she said softly. The attic was dimly lit and cluttered with the remnants of a life left unfinished. Linda pointed out the box and stepped back, giving Grayson space. Inside, he found photo albums, school papers, and at the bottom, a small worn notebook. The pages were filled with Emily's handwriting, notes about her day, her dreams of becoming a journalist, and doodles of stars and flowers. As Grayson flipped through the pages, his breath caught. A week before her death, Emily had written, "Bradley keeps showing up wherever I go, at the diner, the park. He's nice to everyone else, but when we're alone, he's different. Aggressive. Last night, he followed me home. I told him to leave me alone, but he wouldn't listen. I don't know what to do. I'm scared." The words were like a dagger to Grayson's chest. Emily had been afraid of Bradley Harper, and no one had been there to protect her. He carefully photographed the pages with his phone before returning the notebook to the box. "Thank you," he told the Cartwrights. "This could change everything." Grayson spent the afternoon analyzing the diary entries alongside the tape and other evidence. Bradley's pattern of behavior was clear. He had stalked Emily, ignored her boundaries, and likely attacked her the night she died. But if Bradley had killed Emily, why had the tape been sent anonymously? And why now? He called Lila Mendoza to update her. "The tape and the diary point to Bradley Harper," he said. "But I still don't know who sent the tape." "I've been digging into the audio," Lila said. "That whistle we heard, it's a match for a specific type of referee whistle. Common enough, but I traced it to a local sporting goods store that used to sell them. Guess who worked there part-time in high school?" Grayson's stomach tightened. "Bradley Harper." "Exactly. It's circumstantial, but it ties him closer to the scene." Grayson nodded, his mind spinning with possibilities. "What about the second voice on the tape? The threatening one?" "I've isolated it as much as I can," Lila said. "It's distorted, but the tone is male, and there's a slight drawl, like someone local." That evening, Grayson returned home, exhausted but resolute. He was piecing together the fragments of Emily's story, but he needed more. He called Megan Taylor, hoping she might remember something else. "Megan," he said, "did Emily ever talk about anyone else who might have known what Bradley was doing? Someone she trusted." There was a long pause on the other end of the line. "Actually, there was one person," Megan said hesitantly. "Her brother, Jacob. He was older, protective. Emily told him everything." Grayson frowned. "I didn't see any mention of Jacob in the original case files. He left town after Emily died," Megan said. "He blamed himself for not being there to protect her. I think he wanted to disappear." "Do you know where he went?" "No, but I remember he used to carry a tape recorder everywhere. He was always recording things, conversations, music, anything he thought was interesting." Grayson's blood ran cold. "Jacob, could Emily's own brother have recorded the tape? And if so, why hadn't he come forward?" That night, Grayson received another anonymous text message. "You're getting close. Be careful who you trust." The words sent a shiver down his spine. Someone was watching him, guiding him. But to what end? As he stared at the message, one thing became clear. The truth wasn't just about Emily's murder. It was about the tangled lives left in its wake, and the lengths people would go to protect their secrets. The shattered truths were beginning to surface, but Grayson knew that uncovering them would come at cost. Chapter 5, Echoes of the Past. The sun dipped low on the horizon as Detective Grayson stood outside the modest home of Jacob Cartwright, Emily's older brother. It had taken hours of digging through records and countless calls, but he finally tracked Jacob to a small town 3 counties away. The house was simple and unassuming, the kind of place where someone might disappear without a trace. Grayson knocked on the door, his pulse quickening. After a long pause, the door creaked open, revealing a man in his late 40s, his face lined with years of grief. Jacob's eyes narrowed as he took in Grayson's face. "Who are you?" Jacob asked, his tone wary. "Malcolm Grayson." "I worked Emily's case," Grayson said, his voice steady but soft. "I'm reopening it unofficially. I believe there's more to what happened, and I think you know something." Jacob stiffened, his grip tightening on the door. "I don't know what you're talking about. That case was closed a long time ago." Grayson took a deep breath. "I have a tape. It contains what I believe to be Emily's final moments. I also know you used to carry a recorder everywhere. Did you make it, Jacob? Did you record what happened that night?" Jacob's face turned pale. He stepped back, leaving the door open, and disappeared into the house. Grayson hesitated, then followed him inside. The living room was sparse, with only a worn couch and a coffee table stacked with old books and papers. Jacob stood by the window, staring out into the fading light. "I recorded it," he said finally, his voice low and trembling. "But it wasn't her final moments." Grayson's heart pounded. "What do you mean?" Jacob turned, his eyes glistening with tears. "I recorded that tape a week before she died. I overheard Bradley Harper arguing with her in the park. He was threatening her, telling her to keep quiet about something. I don't know what it was, but she was scared. I tried to confront him later, but he denied everything." "Why didn't you take it to the police?" Grayson asked, his voice rising in frustration. "That tape could have changed everything." Jacob's expression hardened. "Do you think I didn't try? The sheriff wouldn't listen. He protected his son. And after Emily died, I knew they'd come after me if I pushed too hard. So I left." Grayson ran a hand through his hair, trying to process the revelation. "Then who sent the tape to me? If it wasn't you, who else would have had access to it?" Jacob shook his head. "I don't know. I thought it was lost years ago. I kept it hidden, but after I moved, I couldn't find it again." Grayson felt the pieces of the puzzle shifting, but they still didn't fit together. Someone else had found the tape, someone who wanted the truth to come out but didn't want to step into the light. But who? The next day, Grayson drove back to Denton Park. He needed to retrace the steps of that night one more time, hoping the answers would reveal themselves. The park was eerily quiet, the willow trees swaying gently in the breeze. He stood beneath the tree where Emily's body had been found, letting the memories of the case wash over him. As he scanned the area, he noticed something he hadn't seen before, an old rusted keychain hanging from a low branch. It jingled faintly in the wind, catching the light. Grayson's stomach twisted. The sound matched the jingle heard on the tape. He reached out and grabbed the keychain, studying it closely. It was shaped like a whistle, worn and tarnished by time. A small engraving on the back read Harper Sporting Goods. Grayson's mind raced. Someone had left it there intentionally, a breadcrumb leading him closer to the truth. But why now? Why after all these years? That evening, Grayson confronted Bradley Harper directly. He stood outside the sprawling mansion that Bradley now called home, his jaw tight with determination. Bradley opened the door, his polished appearance and smug expression instantly grating on Grayson. "Detective Grayson," Bradley said, feigning surprise. "What brings you to my doorstep after all these years?" "We need to talk about Emily Cartwright," Grayson said, stepping forward. Bradley's smirk faltered, but only slightly. "That's ancient history. What could you possibly want now?" Grayson held up the keychain. "I found this in Denton Park. Care to explain?" Bradley's face hardened. "I don't know what you're talking about." "You were there that night, Bradley," Grayson pressed. "You threatened her, stalked her, and I believe you killed her. Your father covered for you, but the truth is coming out. Bradley's eyes narrowed, his facade cracking. You can't prove anything. I have a tape, Grayson said, his voice cold. It's your voice on it, threatening her. And now I have this keychain, tying you to the scene. For a moment, Bradley looked genuinely afraid. But then he laughed, a sharp, bitter sound. You think a tape and an old keychain will hold up in court? You have nothing, Grayson. Grayson stared him down, his fists clenched. The world's changed, Bradley. People like you don't get to hide behind their power anymore. I'll find what I need to put you away. As Grayson turned to leave, Bradley called after him, his voice dripping with menace. Be careful, detective. Digging too deep can get you buried. That night, Grayson returned home, more determined than ever. He spread out all the evidence, the tape, the diary, Leonard's testimony, and the keychain, trying to piece it together. He knew the truth was within reach, but he also knew Bradley wasn't working alone. The cover-up involved more people, and uncovering it would put a target on his back. As he stared at the evidence, his phone buzzed with another anonymous text. Finish it. The truth is louder than the lies. Grayson's chest tightened. Whoever was sending these messages wanted justice as badly as he did, but their identity remained a mystery. The echoes of the past were growing louder, and Grayson could feel the walls closing in. He was on the brink of exposing the truth, but at what cost? As the rain began to fall outside, he knew one thing for certain. This case wasn't just about Emily anymore. It was about a town's buried sins, a family's heartbreak, and the lengths people would go to protect their secrets. The truth was coming, and it wouldn't be silenced.